good afternoon to you, Namibia and the world at large, and thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you're listening to On The Radar, your trusted source for informed updates, critical insights, and unpacked developments from across Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, this isn't just about the headlines. On The Radar is a space for deep, meaningful engagement. We interrogate the stories shaping our country. We ask the hard questions, revisit past coverage, and connect the dots using archived audio, expert opinion, and sharp analysis. Now, from major policy decisions to grassroots realities, we bring you the full picture. Our interviews are long form and in depth because some stories deserve more than sound bites. Now, we come prepared with the facts, the context, and your questions so that every conversation takes us closer to understanding what truly lies beneath. So remember, On The Radar is available across Eagle FM national radio frequencies, Eagle FM website, as well as the Eagle FM app. Subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, interview highlights, and exclusive clips. Don't forget, you can also stay connected via our Eagle FM Namibia Facebook page. So stay with us and stay beyond the surface, because this is On The Radar, where Namibia comes to think, interrogate, analyze, and discuss what's making headlines. Now let's get right into today's analysis today. Now today we're talking about unlocking growth, the role of SMEs in Namibia's economic development. Now small and medium enterprises are widely regarded as a backbone of any thriving economy, and Namibia is no exception. Now these businesses play a crucial role in driving innovation, creating employment, and contributing to inclusive economic growth. In particular, SMEs have the potential to address some of the country's most pressing challenges, such as youth unemployment, income inequality, and regional economic disparities. Now, across the world, SMEs account for a significant share of job creation and gross domestic growth. In Namibia, they are especially vital in supporting local communities, fostering entrepreneurship, and empowering marginalized groups, including women and young people. However, for SMEs to truly thrive and make a lasting impact, they require more than just passion and potential. They need access to resources, supportive policies, and financial services, and practical skills training. Fortunately, both public and private sector stakeholders have begun to recognize the importance of nurturing Namibia's SME ecosystem, from digital banking platforms and business toolkits to policy reforms and summit sponsorships. Various initiatives are being rolled out to give entrepreneurs the tools they need to succeed. Now, I'm not the person who has the knowledge on that. Now, today we'll explore how SMEs can be empowered to thrive and contribute meaningfully to the economy. And I'm joined in studio by Nesta De Jong, who is the head of SME banking at FNB Namibia. Now, with over a decade of experience in risk management, compliance, and SME development, De Jong brings a wealth of insight from his role at institutions such as Nedbank, Namfisa, Lesego Bank, and FNB. His work is at the forefront of efforts to support SMEs through innovation and strategic support in a rapidly changing market. Nesta De Jong, thank you so much for making time for On The Radar, and welcome here.
Thank you, Happy.
Okay.
Quite excited to be here.
Yeah. I'm sorry, that was quite a long introduction, so thank you for bearing. Now, I noticed that you have a thing, and I want to say a thing. You have, passion for SME. When did that start from? Where did that start, and how, and when, and why? Let's get right to the core of it before we get deep into it.
Okay. No, thank you.
Okay.
So starting at the genesis, I come from a family of entrepreneurs, solely just entrepreneurs. So I was raised by SME owners.
I see.
And that's one of the reasons that I'm seated here today.
Yeah.
But besides that, also my whole career trajectory has basically just set me up in the SME space. My time at Namfisa, I was responsible for supervising and regulating micro lenders.
I see.
And it's where I found the passion, you know, at the end of the day, because so much up until to today, a lot of those business owners, wherever they meet me, they say thank you because their businesses have thrived and grown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a business owner myself also. I do a few consultancies in the past. I still do some of the consultancies aspect, but but it's predominantly focused on growing business. Because to me, my greatest purpose is to see people win in life. And knowing the power of SME, all I can do is use my calling basically to take a person's business from a cooker shop to a restaurant. And I can proudly say that ultimately I've seen it. I've witnessed it happen.
Because you're a business person yourself.
Because I'm a business person myself. But the greatest opportunity for me was when F&B called me up for this opportunity to lead SMEs. Now I have a greater impact to do. And that's what makes me passionate, because my why is greater than me. My why is to see people thrive, not just survive as SMEs, because I've seen what SME can do in an impactful economy.
Now, SMEs are often referred to as the backbone of the economy, and I want to believe that this is your philosophy as well. What does this mean in a Namibian context?
So, coming back from an economics perspective, it contributes 12.5% of the GDP, which is quite significant.
At least now I know a figure, 12.5%
to the GDP. And then what the statistics have also proven is that 40,000 SMEs basically provide livelihoods for 200 people. So if you add up the numbers, it's quite a significant impact that they play. But my key point that I always tell people is that every business has started as an SME. Even if you take F&B, you know, if you go historics back to the early 90s, it started off as an SME. If you take the biggest businesses that you see now, O&L, historically it started off as an SME. So that's actually the importance and the significance that this SME businesses play in the economy.
So, Tae-yong, what are some of the most common challenges you've observed that SMEs face when trying to grow or scale their businesses? What is it that they're showing that they share in common, those challenges?
There's a lot of challenges currently out there, but what's key is basically having a structured business, and that's what we see quite often. And our the saddest reality is still that we have that mindset of briefcase businesses. But ultimately, that limits your growth. There's a lot of potholes if you are a briefcase business. And by structure, I mean basically setting up your business from a point of departure, which is having a business plan. Because that's a blueprint that basically guides you in terms of the direction, the vision. What do you want to basically achieve? After you have your business plan in place, is then also your statutory registration requirements, registering with BIPA, registering with NAMRA. And then finally, that makes it easier also for you then to qualify for credit. But what's also ultimately key in the sad reality is financial literacy. There has to be a segregation between the business and your personal finances. So most of the time, we use our businesses as hand-to-mouth type of businesses. The moment the money comes in, we eat up the money. That basically limits the sustainability of your business. Because what I always encourage my clients is that leave the money in your bank account and have a separate bank account, and you pay yourself a salary from your business. That way, that money in your account actually grows up your affordability. It shows that there's a you have financial capacity to qualify for a loan from businesses, and also so that's also one of the key things. And then also skills. Because as entrepreneurs, and sometimes we lack to upgrade our skills. Because even up until today, sitting here, a lot of entrepreneurs still don't use ChatGPT to their advantages. They don't use digital social media to their advantages. So those are some of the things that we as F&B, as a solution enabler to SMEs, are trying to change and providing them with those skills, upskilling then.
Okay, interesting. And also now for, you've highlighted also small business enterprise owners not actually upskilling themselves. But what about those who don't have the know-how, the knowledge how to actually do that, or even to register their small enterprise business with BIPA or tax filing at NAMRA? What should they do in that regard?
No, quite a brilliant question. So the thing is, what we've realized as a bank is that we can't solve these challenges on our own. So we've partnered strategically with ecosystem players. We've partnered with BIPA. We've partnered with the Financial Literacy Institute. But some of the things that I'm quite passionate about is then also our partnership with NABAN and Basecamp, where we basically sponsored them to upskill and train startups. So we sponsored them to the value of $3 million over 3 years. And successfully through their program, more than 1,500 small businesses or entrepreneurs was provided with the skills and with the knowledge how to navigate the storms that will be faced by your entrepreneurial journey.
Another common mistake that I remember when I was even in high school that they taught us is that some business owners, you're starting a business and then you buy all this expensive equipment, huge equipment that you might actually not need. And then on the other hand, the opposite is another person who has a business and they don't invest in the infrastructure that they need. They buy small, small stuff that won't be able to take out more output than the business can actually do. How do we strike a balance between the two to ensure that we are actually on the right path? We are not downsiding, we're not upsiding. How do SMEs actually do that?
So now we are speaking about the operationalization, process efficiency, quite a complex word, but narrowing it down there.
Say that again?
Operational efficiency.
Operational efficiency. Okay.
Yes. So a lot of times is then we don't measure everything, output. So it's like, for example, hypothetically speaking, you're baking cakes. So a lot of times we don't count the cost that's involved in it. How much cost really goes into you baking one cake? Because that cost also, if you sell it, you need to incorporate that cost so that you can sell it at a profit. So coming back to that point, it goes back to my earlier point. If you have a business case, because a business plan basically is a detailed document that helps you put those thoughts that you have, that vision you have onto paper. And it helps you identify all the technical details in terms of how your business can become more sustainable and profitable. So coming back to the point of the cake season, at the end of the day, you need to understand what's the input required for you to now bake that cake and what's the cost involved for each input. And it goes so detailed that you even need to calculate then the efforts required and how much hands is required. So coming back to your point in terms of working capital, if you don't calculate all the costs, you won't be able to efficiently know what resources are required for you to operate at a sustainable level where you can break even or make profit ultimately where you want to be.
Nestor, is it every business that, or is it every small, medium enterprise that would need a loan?
No. Because ultimately, and I always say is that that's a narrative that we need to change. I've seen a lot of successful entrepreneurs that started small. Either started as a side hustle, used a salary, built up their business until it was mature, and then they've resigned and full-time focused on their business. But a loan ultimately at the end of the day should be a last resort. And you must have a purpose for it. Like a lot of times I tell people that you must justify, okay, I'm taking out because a loan comes at a cost. It's a cost towards your business. It's a cost towards you. If you're going to borrow out from FNB today at $1,000, you need to calculate for every dollar of that $1,000, what are you going to use that money for? And then ultimately, how are you going to repay that money? And if you don't need that loan, don't take out that loan. Use it to invest in your business, to take your business from A to B, from that cooker shop to that restaurant. If that loan doesn't help you to grow your business, to create more output, bake more cakes, then I don't see the need why you need that. Then you can just as well stick to your small business and slowly but surely retain your profits in your account and then grow your business.
Well, we're still there. What about the issue of business owners buying perhaps like cars or generally, for instance, let's say I'm a business owner now and I go out and buy a BMW that at this moment my business is not really affording me that and for show off or whatever. Do we sometimes make the mistake and kill our own businesses by the choices we make or by the lifestyle that we are trying to attain?
Definitely. And that's why what I've alluded to in some of the challenges is financial literacy. Because what you've mentioned now is anchored towards financial literacy. The moment that their business owner has financial literacy, they'll be able to weigh the cost in terms of what's wants and what's needs towards the business. And there's no limitation in terms of or restriction to say, no, you can't drive a BMW. Because you work hard. You deserve to also live a good life. But ultimately, what financial literacy just says is that do it within your means.
Mm.
Do it not to the detrimental of your business financials, but to something that you can afford.
I think that's the excuse a lot of people actually tell themselves. You work hard. So, you know, pamper yourself. You deserve this. So I think that's the mistake that a lot of business owners actually do make. Now, in terms of policy reforms, I'm sure there are certain policy reforms that need to be reformed in order to be able to accommodate SMEs and for them to actually thrive and be able to contribute better to the economy. Having had the experience that you have, having worked at NAMFISA, also at NetBank and now at FNB, what are those things that pop in your mind as you're dealing with small business enterprises? That you think there are certain policy reforms that need to be reformed. What are those particular ones?
So firstly, as a point of departure, I love the new governance change of the country.
Okay.
The government is quite focused on SME development now. A lot of times you read about SME development, but yet again, it comes back to your point. The policies would ultimately then actually show that out, the seriousness behind supporting SMEs.
Yeah.
And the key one for me is that the moment we compare SME to a bigger business, then it's like comparing apples to lemons.
Okay.
So coming back to my point is that with tendering processes, there should be tenders specifically and solely just for SMEs.
Uh-huh.
And then tenders for bigger corporations, because the biggest challenge that SMEs are facing, you can never go to battle with a bigger organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's just impossible. They're already experiencing economies at scale, so they charge things at a way lower price than an SME can.
Yeah.
So the moment we can fix a tendering process, then I believe then definitely there's a bigger success chance for SMEs than also. And then ultimately then just for eco, because there's a lot of silos, a lot of pushing in different directions. If we as the ecosystem players can come together with government and say that, listen, let's then sponsor one big incubation center that will empower all SMEs, then it makes things easier. Because now a lot of things are happening. And my biggest focus is also we need to decentralize, because with FNB strategically we went to Rangiamund, we went to Hobabas, we went to Otavi. We should narrow down on that mindset of focusing on Windhoek only, because all resources are here. We must focus on the smaller towns, basically then empower them more, because we can't treat them equal as those in the more developed towns like Windhoek and the north and the coast. But that's also ultimately what can contribute to the success of SMEs.
Would you say there's a strong relationship between government and private organizations in helping SMEs to thrive?
Definitely, definitely.
Okay.
And we are proud to say that we have a strong relationship then also. Because whatsoever we do, we always look at what's already been done. Because we don't go and reinvent the wheel. We'll prefer to partner either with government or either with other players within the ecosystem that shares the same passion, shares the same ultimate drive as we do to empower SMEs.
Okay. Now tell us about the business summit taking place, I believe, this Saturday. What's the hype about it?
Did you buy your ticket? Let's start there first, because the tickets are sold out.
Yeah, but I can still come on a journalism ticket, not so?
Yes.
Come and cover the event.
So ultimately, key on from the business summit is that we want to use storytelling to empower and inspire entrepreneurs. Because one thing that I've realized is that beside us singing the song that SMEs are the backbone of the economy, there's also a lot of negative noise out there. So we just need to refuel SMEs, refuel that entrepreneurs with motivation. And the way we can do that is take local Namibians that have survived from survival to thriving and let them tell their story then to the rest of the people in the community so that they can pick up on that idea, pick up on that dream and have the resilience to say, but if my brother or my sister can do it, why can't I do it? And that's the ultimate purpose of the business summit.
Okay. Sort of to encourage other business owners.
Yes.
By other business owners who thrived.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, what advice would you give to an aspiring entrepreneur navigating today's economic climate?
Resilience. Resilience is the ultimate thing. Because as an entrepreneur, and coming back to me personally, a lot of doors will be shut in your face. You know, a lot of there comes times whereby you won't make sale.
Mm-hmm.
There comes times whereby the only opportunity or the only way out would be then to just deregister that business.
Yeah, yeah.
But ideally, resilience, because it's an inherent nature mm-hmm. of an entrepreneur's journey.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing comes easy. It's never supposed to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need mm-hmm. to fight that battle.
Yeah.
And once you've mastered resilience, then the road becomes easier.
Yeah.
And then focus on upskilling yourself. Just don't focus on your sales, because a lot of times we focus on how do I sell my cake, how do
That's
I sell
true.
My fat cook.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other aspects. You need to focus on marketing. You need to focus then also on your customer. You need to focus on your competitors. Because
yeah.
ultimately, if you know what your sometimes you can even learn from your competitors. And that's why I always say that competition is a wealthy way to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then the biggest last thing that I'll leave, you first need to disrupt yourself before you can disrupt any other market.
Because
your business is you, it's your thinking, and you need to leave the conventional way of thinking and think limitless, because
mm-hmm.
there's no limit to it. If you take Elon Musk, where is he today?
Yeah.
If you come home and you take Opa Ndongo, where is he today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a Namibian to own such a big Toyota brand. So there's no limitation to
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, for some entrepreneurs also, they feel threatened by competition. For instance, I start selling popcorns in my street, and all of a sudden, the lady next door also starts selling popcorns. How do we navigate such competition and stay actually afloat and make sure that my popcorns are actually being sold?
Then we come back to understanding your customer and the value additions.
Oh, okay.
So if both of you are selling popcorn, you need to do something unique.
Add
a little bit of spice to yours.
And that's where value
yes.
addition comes in.
There's where the value addition comes in. So
yeah.
value addition is basically adding something extra that your competitors aren't offering.
Okay.
And that makes you stand out.
Okay. Now, while I like the point that you it brought out on value addition. We've been speaking, or let me say, there's a lot of talks on Namibia to add value to whatever that it is that they produce. In terms of small business enterprises that do desire to perhaps add value to their business, or maybe not even know exactly how and where to start, what should be done to help those businesses add value to their products? And who knows, perhaps outside markets could actually be our markets.
So a lot of organizations are quite doing significantly well in that area.
Okay.
So it comes back to the point of incubation training, basically upskilling SMEs then
yeah.
to elevate their business to the next level. So there's the Namibian Investment Promotion Board.
Mm.
I love their mandate basically, because it's not limited to Namibia, whereby they're exposing SMEs to international trade fairs. They're taking people abroad to go and learn from developed countries in terms of what has been done then also. And then coming back, there's NABAN, there's Basecamp then also, and a lot of new incubations that are coming up, like CC Hub, so forth, that are basically upskilling. And these people are sacrificing their own time to basically go and upskill then SMEs and to better understand firstly, what is required to be an entrepreneur? And secondly, how do I stand out once you've acquired the skills?
Yeah.
So they provide them with knowledge, they provide them with skills, and sometimes even resources. Like for instance, our partnership with B2Gold, they basically gave startup capital to startups to start that business, operationalize it, and also incubation. And to me, that was profound. That was truly a profound impact towards the Otavi community.
Okay. Young, Namibia recently launched that it's going to be trading under the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. What is your ambition and desire for SME businesses to actually penetrate those markets?
So it comes back to our point about disrupting,
value
addition.
Okay.
Yes. So ultimately, my vision is then, from an F&B perspective,
yeah.
is to become an enabler to ensure that my client, once that agreement becomes effective, is ready to play in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're investing a lot in terms of empowering entrepreneurs, empowering
yeah.
our clients then actually,
mm-hmm.
so that once those opportunities are ready, they are mature. They are structured. They are ready to go to the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ultimately what we would lend. Non-negotiable on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What is that product or those products that you think would be definitely penetrating AFCTA from Namibia?
So a lot of times is then understanding the moment that you go into international trade, there's standards that you need to comply with.
That's true.
Yes. So it's basically also then partnering with the Namibian Standards Institute mm-hmm. to create more awareness so that people can understand. Because a lot of times people ask, but why don't we see Namibian local products in a Pick and Pay?
Yeah.
But it's because we don't meet those standards. Mm. So we need to help them to basically meet those international standards mm-hmm. and to be able to be sold on a shelf.
Yeah.
And once we've achieved that, then it's fundamental. But something that we are really doing as a bank and that I'm quite passionate about mm-hmm. is that we are busy de-risking a lot of SMEs. So we have a smart spender credit card
okay.
for first-time borrowers, whereby we are like, Juju, we are giving you 50,000.
Yeah.
Show us you can repay that 50,000 and we open the door for you for more capital.
Mm.
And that's selling currently like, I don't know, sweets.
Yeah.
What's the best thing that
yeah,
sells?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So that's how fast it's selling because there's an appetite for it. So it means that now you'll have credit appetite. The moment that agreement comes into place and you get an international contract, you'll be able to come to any bank, mm-hmm. hopefully FNB,
mm-hmm.
and we'll finance you with startup capital or we'll finance your project and also for you to be able to play internationally.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, Deyoung, what are those tips that you would give to small, medium enterprise owners that you know would actually help them? Things that you've picked up along the way that have also helped you being a business owner yourself.
So for me, ultimately, the most important thing is know your business
okay.
in and out.
Yeah, yeah.
You can never go wrong with it. Know your industry. Do a SWOT analysis, which is understanding your strength, your weaknesses,
yeah.
your threats, your opportunity. Yeah. Understand the ecosystem that you're operating in and ultimately solve for your client. Because a lot of times we do business for profit,
yeah.
but that fails you because your why is not greater. You see? So ultimately coming back, you need to focus on providing a solution. And if you're focused on providing a solution, then later on the profit will come. You need to focus on how do I service my clients? And that's something that we lack. We lack focusing on our clients. And that's why servicing clients or the old client servicing aspect becomes a challenge locally. So if you have that, if you know your business, just to recap, if you know your business, you understand your client, you're willing to sacrifice, you don't negotiate on servicing them, there's no way your business can't succeed. You'll not survive, you'll thrive. Yes.
And your customer will bring other customers.
I don't,
there's a particular word that they say, you something your customer.
Yes.
What is it?
Your customer will basically entrench more customers to your business.
You see?
Them. Yes.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Okay. So what was your final words to the people in regards maybe to the business summit? Is it open to every business owner or is it particular targeting particular businesses and stuff? Or?
It's all-inclusive event.
Mm.
Whether you just have a business dream, whether you're an entrepreneur,
yeah.
it's all-inclusive, you know. Ultimately, the key thing that all of us need is somebody to fuel our dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And by listening to somebody else's story, it will actually empower us then to pick up on our dreams or to push harder then also.
Mm-hmm.
So I can definitely promise those that have bought their tickets, it's going to be an impactful event. You'll take something home that day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Hold on, before I do let you go. Your final words to the people in terms of business people actually making themselves or bringing themselves into the rooms where they can meet other people, partnerships, networking. And, you know, for some people, they are in isolation. They walk on their own because my business is making me profits and not interested in. What would you say to those ones?
So firstly, you can never be in business and not love to be around people.
That's true.
Networking is your new currency.
Yeah.
You need to know people.
Okay.
You need to be out there selling your business.
Mm-hmm.
I know nowadays a lot of people are going digital through digital sales, but unfortunately for Namibia, we still want to see warm bodies. We want to see somebody in front of us selling to us. So I hope those people will dust off that mindset to say that I need to focus on being an introvert because business, you need to be out there. You need to know people. And that's where the best learnings come from, directly engaging with your clients, directly engaging with your competitors.
Yeah.
Yes.
Deyoung, thank you so much for making time for us right here on The Reader today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. And there you had it from Nestor De Jong, who is the head of SME banking at FNB Namibia. So sharing with us on tips for you, actually, business owners, on how you can thrive in your business. I hope you have taken a note. And if you're interested in listening to this conversation again, head over to our podcast, download Eagle FM Namibia, and you can listen to it again, or perhaps head over to Eagle FM website. Now, with that being said, let's pause here, take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back shortly.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On The Radar Analysis. Now we move on. Rondo Urban Constituency Councillor Vicky Kaumer on Tuesday, during the handover of blankets to 42 fire victims in collaboration with Rondo Bank Window Branch, urged corporate companies to give back and uplift local community in Rondo Kavango East region. Now, according to Kaumer, being a constituency councillor and heading an office with no resources, she says it's a burden and that she felt relieved because a corporate company spread their hands and came on board to assist. And I quote, many of those beneficiaries as fire victims, some of them happened last year and some of them this year, and recently we have two among us where the house burnt last week, she said. Now, in June, a woman identified as Petronella Kangoro, who 40 years old. A fire broke out and left a family of 8 homeless after a fire destroyed their shack in Dama location. Now, in the same incident, a 48-year-old man identified as Joseph Anton in Tumweneni informal settlement house, whose house was also burned down by a woman. And I repeat, sorry, by a woman he loves and trusts, a story that made headlines in the newspapers. Now, those two victims are here today, she said. This is a recent event, apart from those whom it happened from last year and also from January up to date, Kama said. A house burned through fire. It's like a person who was sick and was raised from the death, she noted. She further stated the fire is... Mm. She further stated that fire is death because when it is happening, it is so terrible that one person will not know what to do. Now, additionally, there are some houses that are burning totally, all property destroyed by fire. And how is that person going to feel? Let's now take a listen to the lady. Let's now take a listen to Councillor of Rundu Urban Constituency, Vicky Kauma.
Woman and a mother of four children, I feel and fit in the shoes of beneficiaries who are sitting here today. Being a constituent councillor, heading an office with no resources, it is a burden. But today I feel relief because of you, Benguindu, who stretch your hand and come on board and assist. Many of these beneficiaries, as fire victims, some of them it happened last year, some this year, and recently we have two among us where the houses burned last week. It is a woman in Dama. That one, and the men, all of us, we have seen a man from Tumwaneni whose house was burned by a woman. These two victims are here today. This is a recent event, apart from those which happened from last year and also from January after today. Fire, a house burned through fire is like a person who was sick and maybe caused by death. Fire is death. Because when this is happening, it is so terrible that one person you will not know what to do. There is those who are lucky that maybe at the start of the burning, then people will come and assist and some belongings will be taken out. But there is those houses which she or he will cry, but does not help. He will try sometimes to make a point, maybe running onto fire, so that he think, I have just to go be in that house, let me die there. Because of questions, one will now ask him or herself, what is that I will do from here, what will happen? Because sometimes you will start now talking to yourself about what was the costing of those which was destroyed. Some will say, who will take care now of this? A lot of questions. And that time, the answer is less. Sometimes you feel you lose hope because no way to look at where will that come from to assist. Fire is death. Sometimes, after that event, you will see a person who was maybe a good and thinker. That person will become a crazy person. Start talking alone. Some will start now going around looking for food, looking for blankets, looking for clothing, and so on. But where is the hope of these people? Now today, at least by introducing you, Bankwintu. It was said already that whenever you don't have resources to cater for the needy people, sometimes you sit. All of these people were coming at our office. As much as fire have kept that house, the beneficiaries will come to this office. It's why we brought them, for you to see what is that we are going through. Now, as a counselor, as a woman, as a mother, shall I send that person empty-handed? Yes, of course, because there's no way a person will come at the office and I don't have anything. Then what else, woman and a mother of four children, I feel and fit in the shoes of beneficiaries who are sitting here today.
Let's pause here for now and make room for a scheduled commercial break. When we do return, we'll be still talking about this particular item.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
YouSave shelves are stocked with a variety of produce, all at prices that won't empty your wallet. 10 kilos top score super maize meal, 119.99 Namibian dollars. 5 kilograms marathon white sugar, 98.99 Namibian dollars. 2.5 kilos Bokomo fed cooked flour, 39.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr soup, just 5.99 per packet. 2 liters Rite Brand sunflower oil, only 68.99 Namibian dollars. YouSave, your low budget grocery store where good food costs less.
Speaking at the same event, or the handover ceremony, was Anita Hausiku, who is the control administrator at Rundu Urban Constituency Councillor Office.
Where that this letter to go assist them to get their documents from Home Affairs. Normally what we used to do those years, we normally used to send them to Red Cross, but unfortunately, Red Cross, to my understanding, is not operating anymore because of donors and some other challenges. So the poor people, when they come to our office, a person will tell the sad story. While you who's listening, you know the sad truth that you are going to say is nothing. So normally what we used to do is hoping for donors, sponsorship, to log also at our doors. We get Samaritans who's bringing their own clothes. So when we get people like this, we'll just go look on those old clothes to give them so that we can help them. So that is how we have been surviving with them. And we are always appealing to stakeholders. And today we are so grateful and thankful that at least Bankwintu hear our cries, even though you are only assisting with a certain number. It's really going to make a difference. Mothers, singles mothers, they are always coming to our office each and every day. They will come and cry, we have not been eaten for days. So with this drought relief, at least when we have it, here and there we are trying to help them, to give them a bed of maize, just to help them. You have heard me that among us we have Ministry of Gender. That is our one of the stakeholders that we are working together. You will get a client coming from their office, complaining of hunger and whatever challenges. They always knock to our office, hoping also that maybe we'll have something to give them. But unfortunately, we have been just, with drought relief has been assisting us, but now that is stopping, I don't know how we are going to survive with these people. So, in my greetings, I thought of just bringing under your attention to see the challenges that the office is going through.
what we are seeing each and every day at this office, the people that you are getting each and every day at this office. Child-headed household. My sister here from Child Minister of Gender will also confirm. We have many households that are headed by the children. Parents are nowhere to be found. Some of the parents, maybe they are normal. Some of the parents have moved to whatever reasons. And these people, they are still coming to our office to assist them. We have tried to register some of them to be beneficial of drought relief. Now that is going to end, I really don't know what is going to happen. But our office and Minister of Gender have been working together to see here and there how should we help these children. I have mentioned of mothers who are having triples and twins. We have many of them also. And these are single parents. And the challenge is the same. They are always coming here, and we are trying to help here and there. Our feeling is stakeholders, business people, to try to come in, assist us, and help us. That is my greeting to you today, and welcome to Rogo Eden. Thank you.
Let's now pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. And when we do return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in regards to economic indicators.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. And now for what's making headlines today in regards to economic indicators. So we start off with the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. $1 dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 71 cents, while 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 56 cents. 1 pound sterling will get you 24 Namibian dollars and 11 cents, while 1 Japanese yen will get you 0.12 Namibian dollars. 1 Chinese yuan equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 47 cents, while 1 Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 51 cents. 1 Swiss franc equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 97 cents. Please pardon me. So 1 Namibian dollar today will get you 70 Namibian dollars and 58 cents. 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 77 cents. 1 pound sterling will get you 24 Namibian dollars and 10 cents. 1 Japanese yen equals to 0.12 Namibian dollars. 1 Chinese yuan equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 45 cents. 1 Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 55 cents, while 1 Swiss franc will get you 22 Namibian dollars and 19 cents. Now, in agricultural commodities today, the top commodity losers are cocoa at minus 4.58%, rice at minus 2.28%, and orange juice at minus 1.87%. Gains in this category are led by coffee at 2.24%, plum oil at 1.96%, and rubber at 1.54%. On metal commodities, the top commodity for today is iron ore at 1.27% and lithium carbonate at 0.57%, with the biggest losers being gold at minus 0.11%. In energy commodity, the top commodity gainer for today is natural gas, UK GBP, at 2.54%, natural gas, EU Dutch, at 1.46%, and gasoline at 0.54%, while blend crude oil is at 0.50%. The unemployment rate in Italy surged to 6.5% in May of 2025, from the upwardly revised 6.1% in the previous month, well above market expectations that it would have eased to 6% to mark the highest proportion of joblessness in nearly 1 year. The number of unemployed men rose by 113,000 to 1,691,000, also the highest in 11 months, to reflect the unexpected softening of the Italian border market. In the meantime, the number of unemployed individuals rose by 80,000 to 24,301,000, the highest on record. The rise in unemployment was owed to a jump in the labor force, with the participation rate rising by 0.4 percentage points to a record high of 67.4%. Iron ore futures climbed to around 720 per ton on Wednesday, snapping a two-day losing streak at declining shipments from the top exporters, Australia and Brazil, stoked supply concerns. Global seaborne shipments also showed a slight drop, adding upward pressure on prices, supporting the rally. A private survey revealed that factory activity in China unexpectedly returned to expansion in June, suggesting renewed momentum in the world's top iron ore consumer amid a temporary easing in US-China trade tensions. Additionally, hot metal output, a key indicator of iron ore demand, continued to rise on a monthly basis. However, gains were capped by ongoing weakness in China's property sector, which continues to weigh on broader market sentiments. The China Iron and Steel Association also called for stricter controls on certain steel products to retain more supply domestically, a move that could limit upward pressure on iron ore prices. Let's pause here now, and when we return, we'll be bringing you what's making headlines outside the borders of Namibia.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite ofoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarude dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu. Heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news?
Welcome back, and I will take you to news beyond the borders. At this point, we are starting off regionally, and then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, some international news. Now let's start off in South Africa, where taxpayers are urged to beware of fraudsters.
Tax season is upon us, and taxpayers will be able to start filing from the 7th of July. That's when SARS opens e-filing. Whilst many will be eager to file as soon as possible with the hope of getting a rebate, there are others who are also rubbing their hands together. Fraudsters. There are many ways for scammers to defraud taxpayers. They can be done via text, email, WhatsApp or telephone calls. Sometimes their methods are so advanced it's difficult to pick them up. And the fraudsters often use the fear factor to drive unsuspecting taxpayers into buying into their scam. Head of Standard Bank's Fraud Risk Management Advocate Athalie Khan joins us now. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me.
How are taxpayers being scammed? What's the most common scam?
Essentially, what happens with these scams is fraudsters will accost our clients either by sending them an email, a SMS, a WhatsApp, or a voice call. And what they would do in these calls, they would convince the client that either they have a rebate or that they owe the receiver a certain amount of money. They would create some sort of angst and fear with the client, and the client would then be in a position where they would comprehend and work with the fraudsters.
Now
they would then send them this type of money, either via a payment or through some other source.
What's the most sophisticated scam you've seen?
I think one of the most sophisticated scams that we've seen from a fraud perspective is customers sending clients emails purporting to be South African revenue services. And in these emails, they would advise the client that they actually owe money. They would play out these emails in such a way that it looks exactly like it comes from the receiver.
But surely the address that they're sending it from would look different?
The addresses are very different. However, they change some nuances in the address so that it would then not go to the receiver and it would go to the fraud team that's working on it, the fraudsters.
What should we be looking out for?
Essentially, one of the most important things we should look out for is email addresses, and look very closely at the email addresses, and look at the SARS email address, and look and match the two. SARS has become very affluent in terms of how they communicate with clients. Their processes has become very advanced, and you can always check in with them. They have a website. They also have an app. There's multiple places where you can go and validate and verify the actual email address. There's also numbers on the email where it will give you different account numbers. It could be from any bank. The Standard Bank account number they put on these emails is obviously not actual Standard Bank accounts that belong to the receiver. It belongs to a fraudster. We encourage our clients to use AVS to make sure that they check these accounts to make sure that they actually belong to the receiver.
What is AVS?
AVS is Account Verification Services. It's part of the payment stream. So when you go into making a payment, it actually asks you on that screen, can you validate this account number for me? And the bank will then validate it for you.
G20 presidency using agriculture to put Africa on the map.
We've got fertile soils, we've got the most arable land available across the world, we've got lots of rain, we've got water, we've got the youth coming through, we've got a growing population, so we've got everything going for us. So this G20 gives our president and the rest of the continent the opportunity to showcase what we can give and make our farmers more resilient to stand against the water. We've got a youth coming through, we've got a growing population, so we've got everything going for us. So this G20 gives our president and the rest of the continent the opportunity to showcase what we can give and how we can feed our continent and the rest of the world.
Tell us a little bit more about the broader economic role agriculture can play.
Yeah, I think firstly we need to realize that on the continent, agriculture is the biggest contributor to GDP. It's more than 20% of GDPs on the Africa continent. It is the biggest employer on the continent. And it's also the largest trade, sector across the continent. It gives us also the opportunity to export into the world. It's a big foreign exchange revenue earner, and we need to capitalize on that. It's also another, it employs the people. So agriculture is definitely a key sector that we as a country, a government, and financial institutions and the rest of the continent must capture that opportunity.
Now, what kind of measures or innovations do we need to see to mitigate against climate change, which the sector is currently grappling with?
Climate change is one of those big impacts on our sector, and we all realize that we've always had storms, we've always had weather events, we had floods, but it now just seems to be more regular and more extreme. So we need to look at climate smart agriculture across the continent. How do we use our limited resources better? Do we look at climate smart energy, climate smart water solutions, climate smart equipment that we use, climate smart practices? And we as financial institutions need to support the financing of these and make our farmers more resilient to stand against the climate change that is happening.
Zamazamas have become an apparently uncontrollable feature of the landscape in several of our provinces.
Meanwhile, Uganda becomes Africa's top coffee exporter.
Uganda's coffee is now the most sought after on the continent. Its record-breaking performance in coffee exports is a shift in the continent's trade, with nearly 800,000 bags exported in May, up from 550 bags the same time last year. The East African country overtook Ethiopia to become Africa's leading exporter. This represented a 43% increase compared to the same time last year.
We have a good budget supporting the National Coffee Research Institute for this term, and so we should be having very good planting material that is disease resistant. So you have something like, they call it CWD, coffee wilt disease resistant, and They have developed, I think, 10 varieties. They call them KR, K2 Robusta. KR from 1 to 10. So these are really nice.
Europe remains Uganda's biggest market globally, accounting for 67% of exports. Uganda has an ambitious coffee sector roadmap, targeting production of around 20 million bags annually by 2030. Trade experts say tough quality controls are needed to achieve this.
The issues of aggregation. So many farmers all over the whole place. What's the aggregation process to make sure those things come through? We need to work on standards. You're not going to sell out when your standards are poor. That's extremely, extremely important. Then we also need to help the many SMEs, which are about 80 or 90% of our production in Uganda and trade, to make sure that they comply with those international standards.
Uganda is expected to export 7 million bags of coffee this year, up from 5 million last year.
Ethiopia's export forecast for this year stands at 4 million bags, still a significant shortfall compared to Uganda. But to maintain this milestone, Uganda will need to work hard to have its coffee rolling to the European markets. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN Kampala, Uganda.
Africa holds some of the world's greatest agricultural potential.
Innovation tackles Ghana's pollution classroom desk shortage.
Where people see trash, Makafui Iwuku sees raw materials for his innovations. People collect plastic waste off the streets and sell it to him. He then recycles them into school desks.
I found the access to quality education as one of the biggest challenges we have on the continent and we have as a country. So I was asking myself, can I turn the plastic waste into wood-like material that I can use to make school desks, keep the children in school?
Makafui's innovation comes at a time when Ghana faces a huge public pollution challenge and a deficit of more than 2 million desks in public schools. This school, located in the outskirts of Accra, is already benefiting from the desks made with recycled plastics.
Some of them come and touch it to feel it. Say, hey, they didn't believe it. But when we educated them, what made them to believe is the color, the doctor, the dots they saw in it, and then they believe it. So they are very happy. Because they've been using the wood all this time. This time we are moving to sachet because of recycling. It's a good initiative.
Ghana generates 1 million tons of plastic waste every year, but only 2-5% is recycled.
At this school, teachers and students are trying to be part of the solution to tackle plastic pollution. They separate the plastics from other waste and keep them in this tank. It will later be sent to the factory to be recycled into desks.
Ghana is set to ban the use of wood for school furniture as part of a series of environmental reforms to address deforestation.
When we are able to innovate and turn the plastic waste into durable raw materials that can last for 20, 30 or 50 years, it means that we can trap the carbon, which might escape from burning and open dumping of the waste.
But social entrepreneurs in Ghana like Makafui face funding challenges to help scale up production of their innovations.
The financial institutions in Ghana don't have, let's say, green rates for green startups and businesses. The rates are too high. Interest rates are too high. So we cannot access loans. Our projects are seen to be high-risk projects.
Ewuku produces about 30 desks a day, but is hoping to expand to 2,500 desks in a month. He believes recycling plastic waste can conserve the environment and create sustainable jobs for young people, one school desk at a time. Nabil Ahmed Rufai, CGTN, Accra, Ghana.
The International Monetary Fund has approved new financial support for Tanzania.
Africa holds some of the world's greatest
The funding package consists of $156 million for general budget support and $293 million specifically designated for climate-related projects. This brings Tanzania's total IMF support under current programs to $1.2 billion. The recent economic indicators show that Tanzania's GDP grew by 5.5% last year, with projections of 6% growth for 2025. Inflation remains stable at 3.2%, while the trade deficit has improved to 2.6% of the GDP. The funds are expected to support fiscal management, private sector development, and climate adaptation initiatives. With national elections approaching in October, analysts say watching how the government will balance economic reforms with political considerations. The IMF has emphasized the importance of maintaining fiscal discipline during this period. Additional support is coming from other international institutions, including a recent $227 million commitment from the World Bank for Environmental Conservation Projects. The IMF is scheduled to conduct its next regular review of Tanzania's economic progress in the coming months. Daniel Kijo, CGTN, in Dar es Salaam.
Meanwhile, Tunisia groups urge a joint migration plan.
By crossing the Mediterranean. Most irregular migrants from Africa try to reach Europe by crossing the Mediterranean Sea from either Libya or Tunisia. Thousands of migrants have died or disappeared during such crossings. Those who are returned to Africa face much uncertainty. The Tunisian Forum for Economic and Social Rights, which specializes in migration issues, noted that deploying European vessels to deter such crossings is not an unprecedented move in the region. In fact, France and Italy made similar attempts in the past, but failed. Now Greece is trying something similar, but the Forum believes it will suffer the same fate.
The Greek measure, which consists of deploying two frigates and one more vessel close to Libya's territorial waters to control the flow of migrants, reminds us of previous attempts by France and Italy to deploy ships and airplanes near Tunisian waters since the end of 2021. This is part of the EU's security measures to limit the number of migrants. This is not a solution. It will only cause a temporary shift in the migratory routes to the west from Mauritania and the eastern parts of Libya.
Tunisian authorities believe they are winning the fight against irregular migration, largely thanks to financial and other support from the EU. Early reports in 2025 indicated a consistent and sustained decline in departures from Tunisia to Italy, with some sources citing an 89% drop compared to the previous quarter.
Tunisia has been implementing an efficient political and security strategy. This approach has set limits on the huge waves of irregular migrants from border regions with neighboring countries. Tunisia also controls its territorial waters and shores, leading to a sharp decline in the number of departures to Europe. The message of the authorities in Tunisia is that its borders are under control.
But there is much more to the problem than just stopping the boats. Tunisia's president met the Director General of the International Organization for Migration, Amy Pope, last month. Kais Saied called on the IOM to redouble efforts to facilitate the voluntary return of irregular migrants, provide them with financial support for reintegration, and collaborate with relevant parties to determine the fate of missing individuals, whether at sea or on land. Pope said it was a productive meeting.
We also explored ways to facilitate voluntary returns, ensure dignified lives, and create job opportunities for sustainable reintegration in countries of origin. Some measures would benefit all stakeholders at the national, regional, and international levels.
President Saied reiterated his country's unwavering position in refusing to serve as a transit point or host country for irregular migrants.
Tunisian authorities believe that in order to effectively counter irregular migration, a more comprehensive approach is needed, focusing on addressing both root causes and strengthening border security while promoting development and stability in countries of origin. Adnan Shaweshi, CGTN, Tunis.
Two weeks after young officers ousted Burkina.
Foreign ministers of Oman and Egypt urge Washington and Tenla to resume negotiations.
Oman's foreign minister joined his Egyptian counterpart in Cairo on Tuesday for meetings about regional tensions following the 12-day Israel-Iran war. At a joint news conference, Bader bin Hamad al-Busaidi called on Washington and Tehran to stabilize the ceasefire and resume diplomatic efforts. I urge both countries, the United States of America and the Islamic Republic of Iran, not to set impossible conditions for the resumption of negotiations. There must be conditions that create a sound, reasonable, and sustainable return to negotiations. The two ministers also discussed the ongoing conflict in Gaza. The situation is extremely complex, and of course the Israeli side must make its decisions as quickly as possible. There is a good opportunity to reach a ceasefire for 60 days, followed by continued negotiations to sustain the ceasefire. Abdelati said Egypt is ready to host a conference on Gaza's recovery and reconstruction once the ceasefire is reached. Both men reiterated their opposition to the displacement of Palestinians.
USAID officially shuts doors, American government announces.
It was one of the first goals of the new U.S. government. The U.S. Agency for International Development was officially closed down on Tuesday. This marks the end of 6 decades of funding and leading development programs around the globe.
I've had heads of state say to me, the most important institution for us in Washington is not the Defense Department or the CIA or the State Department or the White House or the It's AID, because we're a developing country. We need help in the development process.
USAID was established in 1961 under the government of John F. Kennedy. The agency has supported countless programs, ranging from fighting poverty to improving agriculture and saving millions of lives around the world.
I think we've lost the humanitarian instinct, the humanitarian imperative in the U.S. government by shutting AID down. And I think people in the developing world will see that, or they already see it in many areas of the world. I think there's a lot of anger toward the United States because of this, what's happened to AID.
A new study published in the U.S. journal The Lancet on Monday found that as many as 14 million people could lose their lives if U.S. cuts to humanitarian aid continue until 2030.
U.S. Senate Republicans narrowly passed Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill.
But we also have news of another key vote, this time across the Atlantic in the United States, where the U.S. Senate has just passed President Trump's so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Vice President J.D. Vance cast the tie-breaking vote for it to go through the Senate. That's after 3 Republicans, along with every Democrat, voted against the bill. It is legislation which contains key elements of Donald Trump's agenda, and the bill now goes back to the House of Representatives for further consideration, where it is very likely to face something of an uphill battle to get all the Republicans there on board ahead of Donald Trump's self-imposed deadline, which is July the 4th. Let's talk again to our North America correspondent, Anthony Zerker, who's with me in the studio because he's visiting London at the moment. So good to have you with us. Well, we've already had Donald Trump's reaction to this, haven't we?
We have. He said it's music to my ears. Obviously, he's very pleased by this. It was a big hurdle for this bill to
to overcome getting all the senators to agree. There were four no votes, it seemed, for all of today. They finally twisted some arms. Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska, switched over to their side. They added provisions that gave some subsidies on health insurance to poor Alaskans, and that won her over. And so now, as you mentioned, goes back to the House of Representatives. They had already approved it one time, but now they're going to have to deal with these changes that the Senate put in.
Just explain to us once again why, you know, he calls it, they call it the big, beautiful bill. What is in it? Why is it so central to Donald Trump's presidency?
Well, there was a decision made months ago that to get Donald Trump's legislative agenda through, all the things he promised on the campaign trail last year, they're going to package it into one big, beautiful bill. They're going to do this all in one go, which presented a certain number of challenges because of everything contained in here. There'd be people who had problems with different things and would pick it apart. But it contains the heart of Donald Trump's agenda. That's a boosting by $70 billion immigration enforcement on border walls and new detention centers and new immigration officers, over $100 billion in new military spending for this Golden Dome missile defense that Donald Trump talks about, and making tax cuts that Trump and the Republicans passed in his first term permanent, and adding new tax cuts for no taxes on tip income, no taxes on overtime income that Donald Trump promised while he campaigned last year. So all of it is bundled up into one thing. It's paid for in part by cuts to some social programs like Medicaid, which is a health insurance program for low-income Americans. And it adds about $3 trillion to the national debt, which is one of the reasons some senators like Rand Paul had objections to it.
And also Elon Musk, you know, the richest man in the world, one of Donald Trump's most fervent supporters, or he was, not anymore, because he doesn't like this bill at all.
No, he said it adds way too much to the national debt, that the interest payments on the debt are going to take up a bigger and bigger piece of America's government's expenditures. Trump countered by saying what he really cares about were the environmental subsidies for electric cars and for his space program, because those were things that got cut as well. And so once again, we've seen a renewal of the feud between Donald Trump and Elon Musk right on the eve of this vote, although despite Elon Musk saying that anyone who voted for this was making a huge mistake, enough Republicans came through in the Senate in the end.
Always.
Ukraine aid projects wither after Trump cuts funding.
Ukrainian teenager Nazar was badly injured when a friend threw what appeared to be a discarded munition, which exploded under his feet. After months in a hospital and several skin grafts later, the 13-year-old is now on the road to recovery. But the path forward could be more difficult than anticipated, as funding for his medical care from the International Rescue Committee, or IRC, is running out. That's because groups like the IRC that relied on U.S. funding are struggling after President Donald Trump paused foreign aid in January and froze operations at the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. In May, Nazar's mother, Yevhenia Mastova, told Reuters she was worried about paying for his painkillers and medical creams, saying, quote, "We do not know what to do next." Ukraine was by far the biggest recipient of USAID funds after Russia launched its full-scale invasion in February 2022. According to the agency's now-defunct website, it had provided Ukraine with tens of billions of dollars in aid. In the village of Morozivka, which had been occupied by Russian forces for almost 7 months before Ukraine took back control, elderly residents rely on free medicine from the IRC and its mobile doctors. The village's nurse, Yulia Samiha, spoke to Reuters in May.
"It is a very big help for the people in the form of doctor consultation, free medicine, wheelchairs, walking sticks, walking frames, psychologist consultation. It also means a lot. We don't even have a pharmacy in the village."
This 62-year-old pensioner told Reuters, quote, The only good thing to happen here was that they started bringing medicines. May they keep coming here. After Trump cut billions of dollars of foreign aid, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky appealed to European allies to help. But Europe has also cut back aid funding for Ukraine. According to a German think tank, aid from Europe is declining each year from 6.2 billion euros in 2022 to about 3 billion last year.
U.S. President Trump says Israel has agreed to conditions for a 60-day Gaza ceasefire.
In what could be a significant development in the Middle East, President Trump has confirmed that Israel has agreed the necessary conditions for a 60-day ceasefire in Gaza, just days before Benjamin Netanyahu is due to visit Washington. In a message on his Truth Social account, Mr. Trump said, "We will work with all parties to end the war. I hope for the good of the Middle East that Hamas takes this deal because it will not get better, it will only get worse." Hamas has yet to respond to the proposed deal, and it remains unclear whether the militant group will agree to the conditions. Previous attempts to broker a ceasefire have been rejected. I asked our North America correspondent Arunade Mukherjee if there were any additional details about the terms of this potential deal.
What these necessary conditions are that Israel has agreed to is something that we still don't have details about, and whether these same necessary conditions will be acceptable to Hamas is going to be critical for this deal to actually work and hold and be a success. As you pointed out, in the past also there have been attempts, several attempts, but they have fallen through at the last moment many times. So this time, however, things are different in the sense that there is considerable pressure with Donald Trump really wanting to get this deal done. In fact, as that message on Truth Social, he said that things are only going to get worse. What is also important to understand is that the statement is coming just less than a week till Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will be meeting President Donald Trump on Monday here in Washington, D.C. President Trump made it very clear that he's going to be very, very, very stern and strict about, you know, about the situation there in the Middle East. So it remains to be seen how this really plays out. But Donald Trump also highlighting the fact that the mediators, that is Egypt as well as Qatar, will be delivering this message, and they really hope that Hamas takes this, because as he said himself, that this is the only option. Things could get worse.
Day Mukherjee in Washington. Let's talk to our correspondent Wira Davis, who's in Jerusalem. And Wira, what, if anything, has Israel said about this possible deal, and what might be in it?
Well, there's little news coming out of Israel itself this morning, but Israel's chief negotiator, Ron Derner, has been in the United States this week, and he will have been the one who will have been hammering this out with American officials. Now, of course, Donald Trump has been putting pressure on all sides, even his close friends, the Israelis, to end the fighting and come up with a ceasefire, but the devil will really be in the detail. What most Israelis will be looking at is how many of the remaining hostages, about 23 of them, are still thought to be alive, how many of those would be released under a 60-day ceasefire agreement. Hamas negotiators, when they get to see the deal, the key thing for them will be whether a 60-day ceasefire translates into a long-term peace agreement. They don't want a return to fighting after 60 days, and also whether it includes as well, at the very least, a partial withdrawal of Israeli troops from parts of Gaza. And finally, perhaps from a more international perspective, it's the allowing of unfettered aid in, not through the controversial Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, that American-run organization that has been much criticized, but that would allow the UN, the World Health Organization, the World Food Program, all of those people to take aid in, as was the case under the last ceasefire. So a lot of details there.
And now we've come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar. To stay tuned for Onkonana Dengi program brought to you by Louisa Shimi. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otokwetira o special angeta shake ngeje pa omarudi dayo loka opone ujendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko derewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.